Everybody's microbiome is like a fingerprint.
People that survive to adulthood in the jungle are very healthy.
You always have protection, even if you don't have to think about it.
All things sweets, it kind of fell in my lap.
I'm Richard Gearhart.
And I'm Elizabeth Gearhart. You've just heard some snippets from our show. Stay tuned for the rest.
Want to patent your invention? The chance is near. You've given it heart. Now get it in gear. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
I'm Richard Gearhart, founder of Gearhart Law, a firm specializing in patents, trademarks, and copyrights.
I'm Elizabeth Gearhart, not an attorney, but I have a couple of startups and I do the marketing for Gearhart Law.
Welcome to Passage to Profit, everyone, the show that's all about entrepreneurship, small businesses, and the intellectual property that helps them flourish. We have an amazing show for you. Two guests who have been participants in an Emmy-nominated film called The Invisible Extinction. It's a documentary about the microbiome. So joining us are Marty Blaser, Director of Advanced Biotechnology and Medicine at Rutgers University, and Maria Gloria Dominguez-Bello, who's also a professor at the Department of Biochemistry and Microbiology at Rutgers University. And we really look forward to talking with them about the important information that they have about the human microbiome.
And then we're going to switch gears a little because, you know, we like to mix it up on this show. And we're going to have Matthias Rialfi with Tint. If you wondered what people are doing with AI, listen closely. And then we have Jasmine Mitchell with Jay Carmel's. Wow, she's a baker. Go to her site. You're going to get hungry. Anyway, can hardly wait.
I'm already getting hungry. I can't wait. But before that, we have IP in the news. And what is on IP in the news today?
Time to partay. Ford had a patent application published. It's not a patent yet because they have to fight for it at the patent office, but they had an application published.
So this is the Ford Motor Company.
Ford Motor Company, where... Right. People can hook up all their car radios together and make surround sound out in a parking lot somewhere.
Let me guess, they're going to put all their car radios together and listen to Passage of Profit.
It was surround sound. Yeah, why not?
But obviously, this is intended to provide entertainment for tailgates, for parties, and all sorts of other things. And it is pretty interesting that the technology allows for that now, right?
It is. The other thing I think is that car speakers have gotten so good that it's like having a great speaker and it just happens to be in your car. So,
well, that was my next question. I mean, I remember car speakers in the doors of the car and they weren't very powerful and they weren't very loud. You know, maybe now the technology is better that we can handle these kinds of things.
Well, and they covered a lot of bases. So whatever this app is or however it's going to be controlled can unroll the window or open the door. There can be a control car. I guess it would have to be a control car, right?
The host.
The host. So interesting technology coming down the road.
So Kenya, what do you think about this?
It reminds me of like what they've been doing with smart homes, but now they're just going to create smart cars that do all this extra stuff at the, I guess, probably sound of your voice or click of a button. So I think it's innovative and moving in the right direction.
You could see this going another step further, perhaps, and actually having other types of communication between automobiles, such as you're not driving fast enough, step on the gas and get going. So Matthias, what is your take on this?
Yeah, I agree with Kenya. I think that they locked some very interesting use cases. And also you talked about the sound systems not being too powerful, but maybe here is a good excuse for folks to invest more on the systems. And I imagine if you have a parking lot full of cars playing the same song or in a concert or something, it can be interesting. I think you can create some nice experiences.
Very interesting comments. I guess, yeah, if you were at a Giants game or a professional sporting event, for example, or a Rutgers football game, everybody could have the game on in their car and listening to it at the same time. And it would definitely be an interesting experience there.
I wonder if you could get the battle of the cars.
You could give a dance party new meaning, you know, try to get the cars on a parking lot doing the cha-cha.
A Congo line for cars. That's an interesting comment. Gloria, do you have any thoughts on this?
You know, for people who spend long hours in the cars, it could be a fun thing to do and to look forward to.
I think so. And Jasmine, what are your comments?
I think it's innovative, like Kenya was saying, because when we go tailgating, everyone brings out their speakers and tents, and it's a lot of equipment. And now we know it's downsizing everything. How can we make things easier for people what is more conscious, you know, of what we're doing. So if you don't have to bring a big speaker and be the house DJ and everybody could connect, that is amazing.
That does bring to mind, if Ford has the patent on it, what about other car companies? Would they be able to use this technology? I guess they'd have to get a license. So if they have the patent and only Ford cars have it, I don't think it'll be as useful as potentially it could be. So I guess the takeaway lesson is that technology consistently evolves and patents at least give the innovators the control over the technology. And so, you know, hopefully Ford will, if they want to implement this and it becomes popular, then hopefully they'll be able to license it to other companies. Now on to our featured guests, Marty and Gloria, who we introduced at the beginning of the show. Welcome to Passage to Profit. So tell us a little bit about your documentary, The Invisible Extinction.
The Invisible Extinction is about the microbiome. The microbiome is all the microbes that live in and on the human body and that are our partners for life. And they're our partners that help give us health. They train our immunity. They're good for digestion. And there's been just an explosion of knowledge about this in the last 20 years. But we're, both of us, our work has really concerned us that we are losing the microbes that our grandparents had and their grandparents had, the ancestral microbes. That's why it's called an extinction. A number of years ago, I wrote a book called Missing Microbes, which talks about this idea that we've lost our ancestral microbes. And the problem there is not just that we've lost it, but we think that that's what's fueling the diseases that are really bothering us these days, which is obesity and asthma and autism and a number of other food allergies, et cetera. So this is where our work has been going, but Gloria has a solution.
What we see is that with urbanization, as traditional societies become urban and adopt modern lifestyles with a lot of antimicrobials and medicine and hygiene and processed food and C-sections and antibiotics, we observe that there is an associated loss in diversity. So we immediately thought the whole world is urbanizing. We have to run and preserve this biodiversity because by the time we know how to use it, how to restore, we won't have it. So moving forward, the initiative of the Microbiota Vault, which is to preserve microbes from all humanity, from all cultures, not only from the human body, it expands to also environments and fermented foods, so that we can then do science and understand why are they important, what's their function, why are they healthy, and how can we restore. If we don't do that now, we won't have this biodiversity in a decade.
That is really fascinating. I have to say, we watched your documentary last night. I thought it was excellent, honestly. And anybody listening, if you want to see what the vault looks like, watch the documentary because they show it there. And it's really impressive.
Let's take a few steps backwards. So the microbiome is, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the microbiome is a film of microbes that covers the body on the outside and also exists in the gut. And these microbes, there's a huge variety of microbes, right? And they all sort of have different functions and everybody sort of has a different microbiome system. And they interact with your body in a way that it influences, you know, certain types of physiology. Your gut interacts with your brain and your brain interacts with the gut. So it's all very interactive. And so while these microbiomes have been known for a long time, I think it's just relatively new, right? That we understand how much they interact with our physiology. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, you summarized it very well. The extent of the microbiome that in general, you know, if you're flying at 35,000 feet, all of our microbiomes look about the same. But if you go close up, they're quite different. Everybody's microbiome is like a fingerprint.
But they have the same function. So there is a lot of redundancy. Marty's microbes that are doing one function, I may have another set of microbes doing the same function. And that's what makes us unique, you know. But the functions have to be accomplished by somebody. And we think that if we lose diversity and we compromise functions, that's when there is a problem.
That's when disease happens.
You had a very interesting section in the documentary where you went to Venezuela, which is where Gloria is from. And by going back to people who are living more in nature, they actually have healthier microbiome systems than we do in the United States. And so you've been studying those for a long time. What are some of the conclusions that you've drawn from that?
I have to say that people that survive to adulthood in the jungle are very healthy. These are survivors. It's not about idealizing their life or their lifestyle. It's very hard to live without medicine. You break a leg, you're dead. 1 in 10 mothers or babies die in labor. I mean, it's terrible. You can see how important medicine is. So therefore, when we go there, all young adults and adults are in great shape because they are survivors. And we want to study their microbiome. And also they are interested because they understand that their kids or grandkids will be transculturating, and that's unavoidable. They have already started saying, I want the young people in my community to go and do medicine or nursing. So that's coming. And we want to understand, what have we lost from that lifestyle that should be preserved? How to preserve the high diversity that they have? What components in the diet are important? And then also understand the genesis, the etiology of our diseases. What are the factors in the microbiota that are a risk to develop allergies or asthma or IBD, inflammatory conditions? Is our interest because we need to stop the current trend, but it's in their interest also because they don't want their descendants to have those diseases.
One thing I found fascinating in your documentary was the child who had severe autism, and you actually gave him the microbiomes, gave him treatments where the microbiomes were put into his body to replace what he didn't have. And you could see there were short snippets, so it was kind of hard to tell, but you could see that his behavior seemed to improve with the introduction of the biome to his body. Have you followed up with him to see how much progress he's made?
I have to go back a couple steps. The first thing is to say, just to remind you that the name of the documentary is The Invisible Extinction. So we want people to know that. It's not our film. It was made by two independent filmmakers, Steve Lawrence and Sarah Schenck. And they pretty much follow our work and the work of other scientists. And that work brought us to Beijing, where we spoke with a doctor who was treating patients with autism. The treatment, which is called fecal transplant, and it's being used, fecal transplants being used in the United States for certain diseases as well, is experimental. But in the case that was in the film, as selected by the filmmakers, that child seemed to have done very well. So I said before, we're at a scientific frontier. It's a new field. We're learning things. We need to learn who's going to benefit from fecal transplant and who's not. So work in progress.
Also in the film, you see, for example, the case of the obese woman who is also participating in a clinical trial for fecal transplant from a lean person. You can see in the documentary that the study did not reach statistical significance. But when the scientists see responders and non-responders, that's not a negative result. If 50% of the people respond, it's amazing. So you need to pursue, why do people respond? And then eventually you can predict if somebody will respond or not to the treatment.
Nature doesn't unlock all her secrets. It takes a lot of work and a lot of time developing things to really understand the complex biology.
So Kenya, do you have a question or comment?
I do. You had mentioned some of the factors when it comes to food, and I wanted to see if you could share some of that, because I had heard on the radio yesterday that even French fries here in the United States have 19 ingredients in them, as opposed to Europe, where there's only 3 ingredients. So I was hoping you could elaborate a little bit on where food is concerned in all this.
Well, food has a big influence on the microbiome. We think that it's actually important to eat a variety of different foods. And generally, that means a plant-based diet. Every plant is different. Food is basically a bunch of chemicals. And the chemicals in an apple and in an orange are quite different. But the chemicals in a piece of cake and a piece of bread are actually quite similar. So the more you can diversify your diet, the better it is for your microbiome, because they're eating that too. And our microbiome is diverse, and we want to keep that diversity.
And with the fries and many other things, I mean, the issue that makes food unhealthy is excessive processing and putting chemicals. And so the more natural a food is, food should be, you know, cooked, minimally processed. You could ferment. That's also a process, but you are not adding stuff. And because the industry benefits in being able to preserve food. They can food, they put preservants there, which are antimicrobials. And then when you eat that, you're eating the preservants, you're eating all the stuff. Food industry discovered what humans crave for. And this is really evolutionarily wired. We crave for the things that our ancestors didn't find in abundance. We crave for fat. Our ancestors, when hunting, and the animals are very lean, the same thing with the current day hunter-gatherers, they eat very lean. We crave for salt. Salt is there if you're near the oceans. And we crave for sugar, because sugar, you know, the sweetest thing you can find in nature is honey, which is very, very scarce. And the rest are fruits. And fruits are highly diluted sugars, and they are fructose. And so the industry discovered that we all love that. Everybody loves that. Those three things, which in excess are extremely unhealthy. And then they put that on the food, and everybody loves that. So the only way to control that is to accept that you like it. You know, this is human, it's wired evolutionary probably, and then control it, you know, and you know, control. I'm going to eat a hamburger with these fries that have 19 ingredients, you know, once a month, and enjoy that, but not make it a routine, because it's really toxic. Low fiber, we don't like high fiber food. Unless you know how healthy it is, or you develop the taste, maybe it's we are not training our kids enough to like fibers in different natural fruits and vegetables.
Well, I think, Gloria, that you said something that's extremely important. I mean, all of it was extremely important, but one thing that really hit home for me was people will say, don't eat processed foods, they're bad for you. And you're like, okay, how are they bad for me? Well, they're just bad for you. Just don't eat them. You actually give the reason, scientific reason why, because they're bad for your biome in your gut controls a lot of what happens with your body. So if people could maybe actually make that correlation, maybe it would be more motivation to eat more healthfully, right?
And also the way your body absorbs the soluble sugars of an orange. If you squeeze the orange and drink the orange juice only, you are spiking your insulin very rapidly. If you eat the whole orange that has fiber, it also slows down and your insulin peak is slower. And it's the natural way we have always eaten fruits, the entire fruit.
The other thing, to go back to what Gloria said, manufacturers put in preservatives to increase shelf life in the store. But these are antibacterial. And no one ever thought, what happens when we eat an antibacterial? What's it doing to our bacteria? That wasn't on the radar until recently.
That's a really interesting point. Wow. I do want to shift the discussion a little bit now, because one of the topics that we haven't covered is the role of antibiotics and how they influence the health of the microbiome. I think a large piece of your work has been really focused on how antibiotics can be harmful for the microbiome. Could you explain that a little bit more for our audience?
Yeah, and I'll just mention that the reason that the filmmakers came to see us is that about 10 years ago, I published a book called Missing Microbes, How the Overuse of Antibiotics is Fueling Our Modern Plagues. That title tells you something. So antibiotics came into medical practice about 80 years ago, and they were miraculous. The health professions and the public have kind of fallen in love with antibiotics because they're so great. And so we've been using them more and more and more in tremendous amounts. The average child in the US gets 3 courses of antibiotics by the time they're 2, and 10 courses by the time they're 10. That's the average child. And we're now understanding that antibiotics have cost because they're disrupting the microbiome. And it's especially important in early life. That's when everything is forming. That's when babies are forming their immunity. They're forming their metabolism. Their brain is developing. And the microbiome is the partner in this, and antibiotics are disrupting it. So yes, that's a big part of what we do, is trying to understand how are antibiotics doing this and how can we counter that? One of the counters, of course, is to use less antibiotics. And everybody knows that we're overusing antibiotics, but many people don't want to pull the trigger.
We definitely want to explore this topic because I think it's so important that people understand this. Marty Blaser, Director of Advanced Biotechnology and Medicine at Rutgers University, and Maria Gloria Dominguez-Bello, who's also a professor at the Department of Biochemistry and Microbiology at Rutgers University. We'll be back with more Passage to Profit right after this.
What are entrepreneurs' most valuable assets? Their passion and ideas. We can't protect your passion, but we can protect your ideas. Trust Gearhart Law to protect your ideas with premier patent, trademark, and copyright services. There's never been a better time to start your own business. Contact us at gearhartlaw.com. At Gearhart Law, we have years of experience protecting entrepreneurs' ideas and brands using patent, trademark, and copyright protection. So if you have a new consumer product, a new software application that you're planning to build or sell, or a brand or company name that you want to protect, contact the experts at Gearhart Law, www.gearhartlaw.com. Don't let the wrong protection strategy ruin your business. All of our attorneys are passionate about protection and are licensed and qualified to represent you before the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Don't start your project without calling us first. Contact Gearhart Law on the web at gearhartlaw.com. Together, we can change the world. This ad has been read by a non-attorney spokesperson.
Now back to Passage to Profit. Once again, Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
And two incredible guests. These people are cutting-edge researchers in human health. And they are finding out things that we needed to know years ago.
Now you're telling us. Okay.
So we have Marty Blaser and Maria Gloria Dominguez-Bello here. They're from Rutgers. They're doing research on the human biome. And if you missed our first part of the conversation with them, the podcast is out tomorrow. This is important information, I think, for everybody.
Absolutely.
And we're going to go to Kenya for the next question.
Sure. So before we went to break, Marty was talking about the correlation between the microbiome and the antibiotic. Yes. So does the same thing apply to vaccines? Like, is there a similar correlation in terms of their effects on the microbiome versus how it plays out with antibiotics?
That's a good question. But the answer is that they're quite different. Vaccines are specific. They're for one thing. They're for COVID. They're for influenza. Antibiotics are broad. You take an antibiotic to treat one infection, but that antibiotic is getting all through your body. It's carried in your blood, and it's affecting the populations of bacteria that live in your body. And the antibiotics have a lot of collateral damage. That's one of the big lessons that we've learned in recent years. Again, this wasn't on the radar. Nobody ever thought about it. But every time you take an antibiotic, you're having an effect on your microbiome. It's especially important in young kids, but actually it's important at all ages.
That's interesting because you would think that the microbiome would just repopulate after the antibiotic is out of the system, right? That because they're little bugs and bacteria, they would just, you know, multiply and reach their previous state. But you're saying that's not the case.
So when you take an antibiotic, the bacterial numbers go down. And then when you stop the antibiotic, as you say, they come back up. But the composition changes. It's not exactly the same as it was before. So if you have billions of a particular microbe, it'll be back. But what if you only had thousands or hundreds of them? Some of them would disappear. And from Gloria's work and my work, there's more and more evidence that microbes are disappearing. That's why they called the film The Invisible Extinction, because organisms are going extinct.
Is ecology in action, really? It's like, imagine you have a forest and you have a fire. And then when the forest is recovering from the fire, you have another fire. It slows down, and that's when you start seeing extinctions. The compounded effect of one impact after another leads to extinctions. And if you've waited enough for the whole ecosystem to recover, you gain resilience and the ecosystem can then stand another impact. But our impacts are is one after another, very successive. And especially in children, children are the good example of a forming, maturing ecosystem. If you impact it, it returns back to when mature. And if you multiple times impact it again, it really cannot complete, you know, to become a mature, resilient ecosystem.
So let's just take this a step further. Okay, let's say you do have a compromised microbiome system, possibly because you've had too many antibiotics. What are the consequences of that? What are the medical consequences of that?
We did a study with doctors at the Mayo Clinic a few years ago. The Mayo Clinic is located in Olmsted County, Minnesota. It's a very stable population. They've been studying this population for years, and they have very good medical records there. So we studied all the kids born in Olmsted County for about a 10-year period, and they had records on who was exposed to antibiotics and who wasn't. And they also had records on health outcomes, which kids got asthma, who got eczema, who developed obesity, who developed ADHD. So we looked at 10 different conditions. And for 8 of the 10, getting antibiotics in the first 2 years of life was significantly associated with increased risk of 8 of these diseases.
That's astounding that simply taking something that is supposed to make you healthier and better is actually making you sicker, right?
It's an unintended consequence. Nobody ever thought about this. The antibiotic was to treat the infection. Nobody thought about the collateral effects.
Except, you know, farmers discover that if they give antibiotics from early life, they get bigger animals. So that's why farmers were using antibiotics. Antibiotics are obesogenic, growth promoters. So they noticed that effect, which was good for their profit, and they started using antibiotics as well as hormones and other things. Most of these practices are now banned because they are not healthy. It's a boomerang that is returning to us with consequences that are related to diseases that are actually incurable. The sad thing is that we are trading infections that are acute for diseases that are chronic and have no cure. You can live obese, you can live with celiac, you can live with type 1 diabetes, but you are not healthy. So how can we stop this and prevent it when we need antibiotics or a C-section, which has exactly the same effects? We need to restore because we are not giving up medicine. And, you know, we need to use what we have to save lives. And then we need to think, how do we avoid the collateral damage?
One thing that was a little terrifying in the documentary was that there was a woman who'd gotten C. diff. And for people that don't know, it gives you terrible diarrhea. And her daughter, who was obese, gave her a fecal transplant and she became obese after that. I thought that was very telling, but very scary.
It's a scary story. It's one case. And the thing about C. diff is that C. diff, it can be a lethal infection. It's estimated that somewhere between 20 and 30,000 people each year die in the United States because of C. diff. So we're not talking about a couple of trips to the bathroom. It's a serious infection. And in fact, a clinical trial was done treating C. diff with the conventional therapy with antibiotics or treating it with fecal transplant. And in fact, they had to stop the trial because the fecal transplant was so much better. It was unethical to proceed. And so that's become a very standard therapy for this very particular intestinal infection.
But when you get one, the donors are very well screened. They are not obese.
Yeah.
They are healthy people under good diets and exercise. They, you know, they control their lives because they are donating microbiome.
But the fecal transplant is undefined. It's not a manufactured product like a drug that you buy. And there have been cases with bad results from the fecal transplant. So it's a good step. It's important therapy for some people. There's now development of giving people cocktails of very specific bacteria to try to do the same thing in something that is very well defined that could be used as a drug.
So when it comes to the fecal transplant, is it similar to what they do with cows with like healthy cow rumen, where they take it from the cow's intestines and then they give it to the other animals so that they get into a healthier state?
Yes. In humans, doctors call it the north route or the south route. And still, you know, again, if you're dying for Clostridium difficile infection, you better have one, even if it's yucky, because, you know, it can save your life and the relief is immediate.
I don't think anybody really tastes it. It goes in pills or it goes in through the south route. So it's the thought is unpleasant.
But again, it's ecology. Imagine in your garden, you have a fire. And then your neighbor's garden that was as beautiful as yours, you transplant it. You plant all the plants again. Your garden will, you know, immediately acquire that community and grow healthy.
I have a friend who's had C. diff. She recently was on antibiotic after antibiotic, and supposedly she doesn't have it anymore, but she still has the symptoms. And she did think about the fecal transplant. I'm going to really bug her to get that now because it's not completely going away. It's been 5 or 6 months. And she thinks she got it from eating underdone hamburger that was old.
Actually, C. diff comes mostly from people taking antibiotics. Even a single course of antibiotics. C. diff can be living in your body. You take antibiotics and it kills many organisms, but then C. diff blooms. It grows up.
It's like a weed. If you destroy the ecosystem, C. diff can overgrow.
I think a point that you've made in the past is that the number of antibiotics prescribed far exceeds the number that need to be prescribed, mostly because of cultural issues, because we thought that antibiotics were sort of a side effect-free drug. We've been taking antibiotics and using them at a much higher medical rate than is really necessary.
Let me give you some facts. In the U.S., if we're using, for 100 people, there are about 75 antibiotic courses a year. For every 100 people, 75 courses. In Sweden, the comparable number is about 30 courses. So Swedish doctors are treating their patients with about 40% of the antibiotics that U.S. doctors are treating. And there are no big epidemics in Sweden. The Swedes are doing just fine. That's the first fact. The second fact is that in the United States, there's tremendous geographic variation in antibiotic use. In many of the states in the deep south, the antibiotic use per capita is double that of states on the West Coast, but there is not double the rate of serious bacterial infections. This reflects differences in the practice of medicine and the culture of medicine. There's tremendous variation among doctors in how they prescribe antibiotics. One point that Gloria makes, which is really important, is replacement. But the other thing is that we have to cut down the use of antibiotics because they are not free. They are not free of side effects. And we're learning more and more about the side effects.
So if I'm a patient and I have an infection, is there something I can say to my physician who may just reflexively prescribe antibiotics? But I could say, well, I've heard these can also have negative long-term effects on the microbiome. Is this the only treatment or is this really necessary at this time?
You make your doctor think twice. Yeah. And that's a good thing.
I mean, it's one of the reasons that we worked with the filmmakers to make The Invisible Extinction, to bring this out to the public so that the public understands this. There are many infections that are not treatable by antibiotics. Viral infections, which are very common, are not treatable by antibiotics. And one of the problems is that people come to the doctor and say, please give me an antibiotic. I want an antibiotic. Some doctors react and they say, okay, sure, I'm happy to give you the antibiotic. They have trouble resisting the patient. So we have to change the dialogue. The doctors, antibiotics have cost. We have to instruct the patients. Antibiotics have cost.
Just hearing this now makes me more aware if I have another infection in the future, it might be worth it just to take a couple aspirin and, you know, stick it out as opposed to threatening.
Or ask the doctor, you know, how long can I wait and see if it goes away? Because you want the antibiotic if it's needed, right?
If it's needed.
So can we wait 24 hours and see how, because a lot of things just go away. The immune system works and resolves them.
So for serious infections, antibiotics are extremely important. But most infections that people go to the doctor for are mild. And most of these mild infections go away by themselves. And so if you take an antibiotic and you get better, you'd say, oh, that's great. That antibiotic may be well. But we know that most of these will get better by themselves.
And otitis in children, in babies, most of them are caused by viruses. So
the ear infections.
The ear infection. So, you know, can you wait? And how long can we wait before giving the baby antibiotics? For babies, it's crucial because that's when you are causing the biggest damage to the microbiome that is maturing.
Right. You talk about that in the documentary. My son had terrible ear infections and I was able to get him the tubes in his ears at 13 months. That was the soonest they would do it because he was on an antibiotic almost all the time. And if he wasn't, he was just in misery. But the problem was they weren't a long-term solution for him because it kept coming back. That's another problem.
So we have very important research needs. We need better diagnostics. So we can tell which child has a viral infection and doesn't need an antibiotic and which child has a bacterial infection. That's a really important research need.
This is amazing information. And we're so glad that you made the time in your busy schedules to join us for our program. We really hope our listeners will take this information to heart and put it into action because this is one of those things where all of us can participate in solving the problem just by being a little bit more active with our physicians. And hopefully physicians who are listening will also, if they haven't gotten the message yet, will hopefully also think a little bit about how they prescribe medication.
I would encourage everyone listening to this to go online and find the InvisibleExtinction.com documentary starring these two wonderful people. It's very interesting, and you'll be glad that you watched it. And especially if you're going to have kids or grandkids, I mean, this is stuff you really want to know before you have these kids so you can keep them as healthy as possible. Marty Blaser and Maria Gloria Dominguez Bello, both from Rutgers University, leading cutting edge researchers in the human microbiome, really important stuff. And we will be right back after this message.
Hi, I'm Lisa Askles, the Inventress, founder, CEO, and president of Inventing A to Z. I've been inventing products for over 38 years. Hundreds of products later and dozens of patents. I help people develop products and put them on the market from concept to fruition. I bring them to some of the top shopping networks in the world. QVC, HSN, eVine Live, and retail stores. Have you ever said to yourself, someone should invent that thing? Well, I say, why not? Make it you. If you want to know how to develop a product from concept to fruition the right way, contact me, Lisa Askles, the Inventress. Go to InventingATOZ.com, InventingATOZ.com. Email me, Lisa@InventingATOZ.com. Treat yourself to a day chock full of networking, education, music, shopping, and fun. Go to my website, InventingATOZ.com.
Passage to Profit continues with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
Now it's time for something completely different. Kenya Gibson, who is going to be talking about Power Move.
So for Power Move today, I actually wanted to give it to Nicki Minaj. She recently was in the news for being innovative and branching off to start her own record label, which is not a new thing, but for a female entrepreneur, there's not a lot of female-owned record labels in the industry. So her first artist that she signed was Ice Spice, which many of you may not know who Ice Spice is, but it's a big deal going on in music right now, especially as a female entrepreneur, that she's creating a space for other creators and artists to make room and not having only one label option available to them. So I wanted to give her a Power Move today.
Well, that's great. Anybody who starts their own business has to have a lot of courage. So
Right. Shout
out to her for sure. And also now it's time for our delightful co-host, Elizabeth Gearhart, who's going to be talking about her projects.
Yes. So for those of you who've heard this before, and those of you who haven't, I have a startup called Blue Streak Directory. It's a video directory of small businesses online, and I've been working on it for a while. It's gone through many different iterations, but I'm getting closer to being able to do a soft launch and populate it with business owners. I'm pretty excited about it. I have a website designer working on it, and I actually found a site that had a reviews page. It looked very much like what I want to do. So that was exciting too. And then for all you cat lovers out there, and dog lovers too, actually, I started a podcast with Danielle Woolley called the Jersey Podcats, because we're in New Jersey, where we have people come on the show and we talk about cats. And it's just a blast. We're going to monetize it eventually, we hope. But right now we're just having a lot of fun with it and meeting a lot of really interesting people. So that's keeping me busy these days.
That's great.
So now I get to introduce our next speaker, Matthias Rialfi with Tint.ai, really interesting use of AI. So Matthias, please tell us all about what you're doing.
So I'm the co-founder and CEO of Tint. So we help brands and tech companies embed insurance into their products. Like think about Airbnb or Uber. You as a customer don't even have to think about insurance, but every time you use one of the services, there is insurance in place. So if you stay in an Airbnb and you know, God forbid the place catches fire or somebody, the kid breaks the TV or something. Like Airbnb has worked with a lot of insurers to kind of make sure that you are protected there. So at Tint, what we do, is we help those brands, you know, the companies like Airbnb create that same experience for their users.
What I find fascinating is the AI component. What does the AI actually do that you wouldn't do otherwise?
What we do is like, you know, those companies, you know, we can help them use AI to, you know, help to price those insurance products, protection products better, to adjust claims faster so the users can get paid a lot faster than the user otherwise. So AI is really building on top of like all this kind of vast amount of data that companies and brands have that can be used for insurance use cases. And again, that what we're hoping here is that insurance becomes a feature, becomes like a background product. You always have protection, even if you don't have to think about it.
So that's really interesting, though. That is that the AI engine is going out and gathering information about other past claims and past situations. And then they're using that to resolve claims. And you can do that much more quickly than it was done before. Is that essentially what you're doing?
That's absolutely the case. And I think there's one more component of that is that data that is there is actually helping companies create new products that were not there before. So they can protect from some risks that their customers have, and they are going unprotected right now. So going back to the Airbnb example, suppose Airbnb didn't offer any protection. So whatever, there's an issue, you as the guest, you are on the hook for potentially tens of thousands of dollars. And that can sometimes break the bank, depending on how much savings you have. And it can be a big problem in your life. So that data, that AI elements help even create new products like this one that were not in the market before. So folks are protected when they need.
The fact is that a lot of these businesses wouldn't exist if there weren't some sort of insurance that spread the risk, right? Because that's what insurance really does, is it spreads the risk over a large population. And in that way, it makes certain types of businesses possible. So AI is such a popular topic now. We've heard Bill Gates talk about it. Mm-hmm. We've heard Elon Musk talk about it. You are very involved with it. Do you have any special opinions about the long-term implications of artificial intelligence?
Yeah, so in the long term, it's going to change everything, right? A little bit like life before and after computers, like it really changes what you can do. I, as a founder, have an optimistic view of the world. And my view on AI is that I see that AI is going to enable people to do things that they are not capable today. Going back to computers, right? Folks could be better in what they do. They can produce more. The economy can produce more. We can now do videos, music, consume all of that in a way that was not possible before. The computers, in a way, I think AI is going to be the same. I think there will be a certain types of day-to-day activities that are going to be a lot easier when we have AI, so that it was going to enable and free up time to do other kind of more sophisticated work. And folks would adapt and they would evolve as they have been doing with, you know, all the technical changes that happened before AI.
I think you're right. I think people are using it more in everyday life, because I went to a webinar put on by Meetup about ChatGPT. That when I signed up, there were 5,000 people signed up. By the time I went to it, there were about 18,000 people there learning how to use ChatGPT. And our daughter's using it to do meal planning. So I think the more it comes into the mainstream, I think you're right, it's going to be like before and after.
I want to go back to something that Gloria said in the documentary that we were just talking about, The Invisible Extinction. She said at the end, with medicine, we're sort of cheating nature. And there's a price that you pay for doing that. And I think AI is sort of falls into the same category. We're sort of cheating on productivity, but there's a price to pay, because I spend so much time like learning passwords and trying to avoid being hacked by another account. And I think overall the productivity gains are probably worth it, but it's not as clear as you would think it is, right? Because every time you take a technical advance, there's a price to pay for that.
Well, I think it's taking over the world.
Well, that's what everybody's talking about.
I think jokes apart, I agree, right? And I think like it's the same way that now, what, 80 years after antibiotics were invented, we are just starting to know the side effects. I think it's the same with any new technology, including AI, right? And I do think that you're absolutely right. Now there's a hype. The hype is going to die down, as it does with any new technology. Then we will see the technology is not as ready as we thought. Think about self-driving cars. Like for the last 10 years, we've been hearing that by now, self-driving cars would be taking the road and we will not be driving anymore. Like, how many self-driving cars are actually out? So it takes a lot longer to go through those technology changes than people anticipate. But then when it comes to the cost of AI, you're absolutely right. I think there'll be costs, there'll be side effects. Think about one use case like social media. Social media, like we thought it was all good, right? Being connected to friends, but then we saw the effects on elections, on freedom, on the kind of fake news and things like that. So yeah, in a few years, we'll know. The reality is like nobody knows exactly what is the side effect today.
I teach my students in the classroom about ChatGPT, and we do exercises because people are using it for the content. They want to know something. You, instead of Google, is faster. ChatGPT gives you an essay written about it. But there are many mistakes. I think with time, it will get better because then the information can be corrected. Then if you ask again, it comes back with the correct answer. But it will take time. And I think instead of having the typical reaction that we saw with teachers and professors when Wikipedia started, it was like, Dan, don't use Wikipedia. It's not, we have to face it. It's here and it's here to stay. So let's use it. And you will see that it's not perfect, but that it tells you good, also correct things. So the message I want to convey to the student is don't be close to the idea because this may have come to stay, but be aware. You have to curate and check facts. Don't believe everything it says.
It's a great point, and I think it goes back to in the future, assignments will change, right? The writing an essay summarizing a topic will no longer be enough because anybody can do that with ChatGPT. Now the assignment will be focused in kind of more complex analysis and crossing disciplines and things that we're not focusing today, or we're still focusing on the basics.
Or write an essay in ChatGPT and your assignment is to find the errors, what is incorrect.
I've always kind of wondered, as we have these new tools like the internet and like ChatGPT, from an educational standpoint, is that better for students or worse? Because I grew up in an era where you had to do rote memorization of all sorts of things. And I like to think that education served me well. But now if I don't have to do all of those things, is my brain function suffering? Am I losing cognitive skills because of these other tools?
I don't think so. I think these are tools. These are enabling tools. You know, we could never have gotten to the moon without computers. We couldn't have an airline. Imagine an airline industry without computers. AI is like the next step of that. But it leads us to a problem like when all the Southwest flights were grounded because the computer system. So we're more vulnerable in a way. Computers are AI too. This is just the next generation of AI.
So your feeling is that human intelligence is a constant and that we just have tools and that the process by which we learn and think maybe changes, but it's still going to be effective.
And if you think about Steve Jobs has a famous quote that computers are the bicycle of the mind. I would want to say that AI is the airplane of the mind, right? It's like it can bring human mind to even the next level when everything is working properly.
So Mateus, what led you to develop this AI product for the insurance industry?
My former employer is a company called Turo. They are in the peer-to-peer car sharing space. So you can basically rent car from individuals, your neighbors, somebody in a different city. And Turo had to invent their own insurance product. So cars are illegal on the road without insurance. And if you are making money out of your car, your insurance doesn't cover. So Turo invented their own kind of whole insurance product to exist. And I was one of the early employees and I spent a lot of my time working on that insurance product. And I saw how hard it was for Turo, which is not on the insurance business, to figure all of this without help. And we saw on the AI side, the power of using analytics, using AI to mine all the data that Turo had inside. So we connect the dots, my co-founder and I, and then we decided to start Tint, which bringing the same technology Turo used to really now every company out there.
It's really great to see somebody using AI for real world applications. I mean, it's been so esoteric till now.
Where can we learn more about your company?
You can go to tint.ai, which is our website, or you can find me or us on LinkedIn as well.
Okay, so now we are on to our next presenter, Jasmine Mitchell with J. Carmel's, and her website is absolutely yummy. So tell us what you're doing, Jasmine.
I create all things desserts, from custom cakes to gourmet cakes and desserts, traditional and all things sweets. It kind of fell in my lap one time. I was on maternity leave and my daughter, I always say it, she was a unicorn baby. did not cry, slept through the night. And I'm a person that's very active and my brain is always going. And I decided to make a cake one day that my aunt gave me a recipe and it was terrible. And from that moment on, I decided I am going to do anything I can to perfect this, because how are they doing this on TV and on all these shows? Like, if they can do it, I can. And I just started practicing. And next thing you know, my family started ordering stuff for me. And then friends started finding out. And then it became a business. Next thing I knew, I was going downtown, getting my license and patents and everything. And I'm like, oh my goodness, now that I look back at it. And that was 8 years ago. And I'm continuing learning every single day.
Well, congratulations. So what do you see as the future for your business?
I honestly go back and forth with, do I want to have a storefront that I have to pay overhead? Or is this going great inside a commercial kitchen? Because I rent in a commercial kitchen right now. And it just makes it so easy to meet other people because we share a kitchen together. But that dream is kind of teetering back and forth. But also, I would like to be in other states and teach people, because I was a stay-at-home mom for a little bit of time, did not know anything about baking, and decided, let me try this recipe. And now I'm teaching people. People call, you know, my company and say, hey, can you teach me? Do you have classes? I just want to learn how to bake a cake or something simple. And I have a party coming up. And that's how my Instagram on social media grew so much. And I started giving recipes and how-to videos for people. People were just reaching out, basically, of like, I need this. The feedback was insane. So then I realized I'm doing custom cakes on the weekends, but during the week, I'm a teacher to people and just creating their palette and making it bigger.
Well, I have to throw this to our marketing guru, Kenya. Kenya, what do you think?
I think it's great. I'm not as well versed in the baking space, but I just, you mentioned a few patents. What have you gotten patented that you feel comfortable sharing?
My name is strong, and a lot of people don't understand. Get your name patent, get a trademark. Because anybody can have it. Like, there's a billion people in the world and someone could be thinking about it. You know, I'm not the only Jasmine. I'm not the only J. Carmel in the world. So you want to make sure you hold tight to that and own what you own, because somebody could own it in a blink of an eye, and everything that you worked hard for, it can go to waste. And I've learned that with everything I've learned in the baking community. And you may say, oh, what, baking? That's nothing to get patent. That's nothing to get trademarked. Yes, what if you come out with a dessert that someone wants to use? Yes, it's your creative thing, but somebody could take it that's more popular than you and take it to the next level. And now it's theirs. And you're like, no, it was me. I promise it was me that did it first. That's the same with book. That's the same with AI. That's the same with science. What we've been talking about all day.
Yeah. I mean, we really appreciate the plug there that you gave for intellectual
yeah, we
property.
Agree
that was
more.
Very passionate. But of course, I couldn't agree with you more. And a lesson to anyone who's starting a business is that you want to first check and make sure that your trade name is available. And then you want to protect it, because you're right. I mean, the cost of doing that compared to like having to go through rebranding, you know, and sometimes it's unfortunate, but the world can be a cruel place. And sometimes people borrow things that they shouldn't borrow. And you know, you don't want to see your investment in your business just go out the window, right? So having intellectual property can help you protect that.
So are you selling online? Are you shipping to people across the country? What are you doing right now?
And not at the moment. So my Instagram went skyrocket overnight. I posted a video of this peach cobbler cake and everybody went crazy and was like, can you ship it here? Can you ship it there? But yes, I'm working out a commercial kitchen, but it's myself and my family members. You know, you start small and then you grow into something big in the future. Maybe Walmart's and Target's and big stores, you know, take over and say, hey, we want to sell your product in there. I see that. I do see that happening in the future, and I will not be opposed to it.
What is your biggest hurdle right now? What roadblock would you like to alleviate?
I would say what every entrepreneur would say, yourself, you know, fear of the unknown and putting yourself out the way. Every day is a fight of, okay, am I doing it correctly or I'm not? But being an entrepreneur, you're not doing anything wrong. You have to take it step by step. Nobody started knowing everything. I learn every single day that, oh man, I shouldn't have done that. How can I have a solution to this problem? So I would say I'm my biggest hurdle because, for instance, we talked about shipping. I could start tomorrow, but I'm like, oh, no. Let me research it one more good time. But I have everything, but something else comes on our plate as an entrepreneur, and that's navigating what's the priority and what should I go with first and what should I put last. So yes, me. And I'm honest with that and transparent.
There are no maps where leaders go, right? So
right.
Kenya?
Yeah. And I was just going to ask, have you ever thought about going to a subscription-based model on your IG or any of your social media? Because you give a lot, I see you have a lot of recipes that are up here for free and they're great, but like, have you ever thought of a way to like maybe monetize it and charge like a monthly fee and then people get like X amount of recipes per month or something like that?
Yes. So I actually have an ebook coming out on Monday called All Things Cake, the cookbook. So you can have the life of the party. That's one way I'm monetizing in. Then I'm also going to move to subscriptions. But when you're on Instagram and your social media content is going big, and even if you're a vlogger or, you know, radio or anything like that, what do? You build a community first. They have to trust you. They have to know they have a relationship with you. And if you put out your stuff saying, hey, buy me right now, it's like, I could go and just Google this recipe for free. So what makes her different? So right now I'm building. Yes, when you look at my page, I have 74,000 followers, but to me, that's not enough. Like, let me build my relationship. Let me have everyone get comfortable knowing that they can trust me. Because right now, somebody can go follow me just for my reel and say, oh, that looks good. I just like looking at good dessert, because they could look at a video and guarantee you in the comments, what's the recipe? It's in the caption, sweetheart. Like, it's right there. Just read. But nobody wants to do that. So it's building, going in the stories, building a relationship, showing my husband, showing my kids, showing my family, showing my kitchen. I'm accessible to you. And with accessibility, it's building a relationship. You know things about me that you may not know about another blogger, that they don't show their face. So those are the ways that like I'm doing right now. I'm building that community. So then therefore, when the subscription comes, it's not even a thought. I'm going to subscribe to this because she's giving me stuff that I want.
Yeah. Well, I say the community's there. You had one video that had 1.2 million views.
Yes. And you were saying, and you're asking how I did it. And I'm just going to be honest. Don't overthink anything. And I'm an overthinker when it comes to things, but every single video that has went viral, I posted that in a rush. And I could say that, you know, in other videos where I strategically wrote out a script and said, okay, this is what I'm going to do first. This is what I'm going to talk about. This is this and this and that. It didn't go anywhere. And I'm like, what? What's going on? But you could see the authenticity in it and being honest in it. And when I saw that video, I was rushing on a plane. And I was like, I need to put something really quick because social media makes you think that you have to be there 24/7, right? And I'm like, oh, I didn't post anything. Let me hurry up. And I went on a plane. And when I came off the plane, my phone was going crazy. I'm like, what is going on? The wow. Video went viral. And I was like, I didn't even do anything.
I think Kenya's right. I think he may be close. So we had Stu McLaren on. He's a subscription guru. And he said that he had this woman who makes balloon animals, was able to grow a big subscription base and make like $120,000 a month showing people balloon animals, like seriously. So I'm kind of following Stu because I want to do a subscription model with my business too.
If people are drawn to you and your product to that degree, I mean, you've got something special there.
Oh, thank you. You can follow me on Instagram at jcarmel, is J-C-A-R-M-E-L. And my website is jcarmels.com.
Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart. Our special guests today were Martin J. Blazer, MD, and Maria Gloria Dominguez-Bello, both from Rutgers, and we will be right back after these messages.
There's never been a better time to start your own business. The opportunities are infinite and only limited by your imagination and enthusiasm. At Gearhart Law, we believe the most successful companies all have one thing in common. happen, they start with a solid foundation first. Gearhart Law has years of experience protecting entrepreneurs' ideas and brands using patent, trademark, and copyright protection. So if you have a new consumer product, a new software application that you're planning to build or sell, or a brand or company name that you want to protect, contact the experts at www.gearhartlaw.com. Our professionals will create a custom strategy designed to fit your needs and your budget. All of our attorneys are passionate about protection, licensed, and qualified to represent you before the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Don't start your project without calling us first. Visit GearHeartLaw.com. Together, we can change the world. Visit GearHeartLaw.com. This ad has been read by a non-attorney spokesperson.
It's Passage to Profit.
Now it's time for Noah's retrospective.
Noah Fleischman is our producer here at Passage to Profit, and he never stops trying to make sense of the future by looking at the past.
How do you make an adult instantly happy? Be darned if I know. It's not like we're small children anymore. It isn't as though a little plastic toy inside a box lunch is going to brighten up our day all of a sudden. Well, the marketing division of the largest fast food chain in America begged to differ with that, and they said, hey, why not give it a try? The Adult Happy Meal, biggest success they've had in years. What do those folks understand about us that we don't? Well, they know about the inner child. The inner child is that small young soul within us that's there since the day we're born. It's with us all of our lives. It directs our impulses, our instincts, our emotions, our desires. We spend all of our time as grown-ups trying to suppress that inner child. The people at the marketing division are saying, hey, honor that inner child once in a while. Show him or her some love, some respect. There's more than one way of doing it, too. There's a little piece of memory, some nostalgia, sometimes a song, a thought. Here's a poem to keep in mind. Honor your inner child every day, and you'll have an easier time finding your way.
Now more with Richard and Elizabeth. Passage to Profit.
Now it's time for Elizabeth's question.
What are you looking forward to this summer? And we'll start with you, Mateus. What are you looking forward to?
Looking forward to like normal traveling, when you can go to places, when you don't have restrictions, you can feel that we are fully back to normal. I know it's going to be crowded, but even that is part of traveling. So I'm looking forward to that. My parents live in Brazil, so I'm going down there, visit them in July. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Nice. What about you, Jasmine? What are you looking forward to?
I'm going to Italy and Rome and Greece and Pompeii, and I am so excited. I cannot wait. My bag is already packed, and that's in July.
I'm jealous of you guys.
Are you going for business or are you going for pleasure?
For pleasure. My family, it's like 9 of us, and we always go for a big trip once a year. So that's where we're going this time. We have a different place every single year, huge place. So yeah, we went to Mexico last year. So
awesome.
That's great.
We made a promise that when we went to Mexico that we were going to do the 7 wonders of the world. So now we've already planned out like the next 7 years.
Nice.
I'm excited about it.
Do they make you cook?
Yes. We get together every single Sunday and my mom's like, you didn't make any dessert. I'm like, this is my rest day. No, I did not.
I never really thought about it, but I guess if you like make desserts for a living, you want a day off every once in a while, right?
Anytime someone asks, I'm like, are you kidding me? But okay.
Kenya, what about you? What are you looking forward to this summer?
Traveling. I actually won a trip to the Bahamas. So well, I'm really excited about that. My husband doesn't want to go, so I might take Naya and it might be a girl's trip. But I'm definitely going, and no later than August, which is my birthday month.
I was so glad that spring got here finally. And it's been kind of an early spring. We had a mild winter in New Jersey, really not too much to complain about. But I was just so glad when the weather warmed up, we went through daylight savings time, and now I get to spend some time out on the deck. We have a lightly wooded backyard, so really looking forward to just spending some time outside. I have a small sailboat that used to be on a lake, but last year we moved it from the lake to the ocean. And so I'm going to have the opportunity to actually sail in the ocean now. So
I'm not going with them. I'm not a swimmer.
So, right. So that's the downside, but it'll be a different environment. The lake I was at didn't have a lot of wind, which was really bad if you're a sailor. But being out on the ocean, there will be wind. And I'm looking forward to zipping across the bay in my sailboat.
Well, I was just looking forward to the warm weather. We're not supposed to have like that killer heat this summer. We're supposed to have like a normal summer where it'll just be nice and warm. But We do get the most delicious peaches here in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. So after hearing about Jasmine's recipe.
So that's why he's going crazy about the peach cobbler. Okay.
Yeah, that is what I'm looking for. Yeah, that peach cobbler this summer with these delicious Jersey peaches. So
that sounds good.
So now it is time to do a review. We had Martin J. Blaser, MD, Maria Gloria Dominguez Bello, and they are working on the human biome. They're from Rutgers, and they were stars of a documentary, and you can find it online at theinvisibleextinction.com.
It was nominated for Academy Award, by the way.
Right. And in that, they talk about a vault of microbiomes that they are afraid are going to disappear. There's also a website, microbiotavault.com. So microbiota vault.com that you can go to if you want to find out more about that. It's really pretty interesting. They show it in the documentary. And then we had Mateus Rialfi with Tint.ai is his website. And he is helping small businesses really get the insurance they need behind the scenes using AI. It's really interesting what he's doing. You know, you always kind of wonder, well, what do real people use AI for that really know what it does?
And here's the perfect example, right? Yeah, and yeah. It's on something that you wouldn't necessarily associate with AI right out of the box. But after talking about it with him, it makes a lot of sense. So check it out on his website and, you know, see if it'll apply to your business.
And then we had Baker Extraordinaire, Jasmine Mitchell with J. Carmels. And her website is jcarmels.com, jcarmels.com. But look for her on Instagram because that's where you can really learn a lot. And she's J Carmel without the S on Instagram. And I'm going to go look for that recipe.
Go get the peach cobbler pound cake recipe. Right.
Find Richard at gearheartlaw.com, GEARHARTLAW.com. If you have any questions about patents, trademarks, or copyrights.
Before we go, I'd like to thank the Passage to Profit team, Noah Fleischman, our producer, Alicia Morrissey, our program director, and Mark Wilson, our syndication manager. Our podcast can be found tomorrow anywhere you find your podcast. Just look for the Passage to Profit show. And don't forget to like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, while the information on this program is believed to be correct, never take a legal step without checking with your legal professional first. Gearheart Law is here for your patent, trademark, and copyright needs. You can find us at gearheartlaw.com and contact us for a free consultation. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.